Awesome. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, everyone. Welcome to the second meeting of Hyperledger Process Security Update Task Force. And as a first note, all Hyperledger meetings, as part of open source community, we are advised to follow antitrust policy notice. And I see all the familiar members on this call, so I hope you're all aware about it. And we'll get started with today's agenda. So mainly we have two topics to be discussed. It's continuation of what we had in the initial call some time ago, late last year. And before that, I see any new members on the call. Oh, I see Mick joining. Hi Mick. Good to see you.
Yeah, I haven't seen you since Phoenix, Mick. Good to see you.
It has been a while.
Awesome. So we'll get started with today's agenda. So the first topic for today would be Dano will go over or walk us over a recent issue that was filed on BASO. And then he will also explain, go through the forms that he had to fill in, which rated that particular vulnerability. It gave it some score, so we'll walk over that. So over to you, Dano.
Okay, let me share my web browser. So the vulnerability that we found a couple of months ago, I think it was December, had to do with, published in December, so we found it in November. So I was doing some optimizations for the EVM, and I was messing with, one of the things I was messing with was the shift operations. And it passed all the reference tests. They have a set of reference tests that Ethereum Foundation runs. They test a lot of error cases and a lot of boundary conditions. So I had pretty high confidence that it was still gonna work, that it wasn't gonna cause any problems, because we had all the tests. So I went ahead and published it, we shipped it. And then about a month later on one of the test nets that Ethereum runs, I think it was Rinkeby, we fell out of consensus. We basically got a block that everyone else accepted and we rejected because we came to a different conclusion as to what the EVM execution for that should have been. So I spent some time, this isn't the first time I've had a debug, a consensus failure, the first time that it's directly my fault, which was a fun discovery. But it was mystifying to me why it was initially. It has to do with this shift operator. The tests were testing on limits based on 256 bits, but the actual bug itself was when we cast it to 32-bit signed integers, it should have been cast with 32-bit unsigned integer, which was not a test case that the reference tests were testing. So when we looked at this, you know, I thought about it for a while. I thought, you know what, if somebody deliberately, because we've seen this before in Ethereum, if a client has a vulnerability in its consensus, bad actors can use it to split networks. If we were, because Rinkeby is only run by Geth, but if this was on Gorli and there was a block that was had this error where Basie was one of the validators and Nethermind and Geth and Open Ethereum were the other validators, if these validators, if one of them fell out of line, then it could cause the possibly the whole chain to halt. If one validator was refusing to validate the chain, the rest of the validators were working. So it's a very exploitable way to bring a chain to a halt if it's deliberate and planned. So in writing this up, one of the questions that has, so if when you do a new vulnerability, I'll go ahead and go to the edit mode, it asks you a bunch of questions. And one of the questions is, well, what's your CVE score? And this is actually, when I went through this process, when I thought about filling it out, when I decided it escalated to the level of something that required a CVE. And this is a common set of scoring rules that they have for, there's something that you can do that's bad to your software. Well, how bad is it? They have a calculator here on GitHub when you fill it out. But I like better the one on first.org, the 3.0 calculator. And the reason is, so let's go ahead and start this out fresh. It gives you the same things. You can put in values. It tells you how bad you are. Just click all the far things on the left, get a full score. It's going to tell us the score is zero. If you can't do anything, then, you know, there's no vulnerability. And it gives you the nice summary string here that you can then paste into this field that will calculate it for you. But what I like about it is if you mouse over it, it'll tell you the definitions of what these values are. You know, is it network, adjacent, local, physical? And it gives you the details. You know, you need physical access to the computers. You need to be on the local network. You need to be next door to it. Or in the case of this, you just need to be on the same network. So you click network. What's the complexity? It's low. Someone wrote a dumb contract. You just need to redeploy it and run certain things. The one that Geth had, you know, it's some of these contracts, it's high complexity until someone shows you how to do it, and then you just copy it. There's no privileges required, no user interaction, no scope, no confidentiality. What was the thing that put it up? Oh, availability. So availability, just clicking this instantly brings it up to 7.5. Now availability is on none. There's no impact on the availability when the impact components. There's reduced performance, but I rated it high because you use this and it's trimming it off on us on the right side so you can't see it. So with high vulnerability, availability, you do this exploit, you can possibly bring a network down in the correct configuration. I mean, maybe that's to bring it down might be a little bit of a high complexity, but people have, you know, it's not, I continue to rate as low complexity to cause problems because at the very least, it brings your node servicing the network down, which also breaks the availability. So from this, you get a vector string, and this is what drove me to go ahead and say this is a CVE-worthy bug. I've written many bugs in Beisu, but this, I think this is the first one that elevated to the level of we needed to get a CVE number for it. And I just, you know, want to say that the process of reporting security in GitHub is amazingly easy. You fill out these things, it'll give this number GHSA, this completely opaque number for you. And this says I have a CVE number, but when you're filling it out, you can say, I don't have a CVE number, please issue it to me. So GitHub will get the CVE number for you. You don't have to have any accounts with MITRE or any high level security clearance or any of the other things to get at it. And so you can get the CVE number. And of course, the most important part of any security vulnerability is you need to describe what's vulnerable and how you can exploit it. And this is just a standard old markdown thing to fill out. So in here, I describe what you would need to do and the impact and why this rates as a high as opposed to 5.9 medium that we probably could just quietly fix and say, please don't use the old versions. Another cool thing about this is you can also get related patches for it. Now, because it's the Ethereum way, the actual fix for this went in differently. GitHub, Hyperledger, Beisu, pull request. This would be back in December. Not pull request. We want Beisu commit log. And this is very traditional way for an Ethereum client to fix things. You quietly put the fix in, you ship it. When you get enough saturation, then you say, oh, by the way, that fix was a horrible security bug, but now nobody can exploit it because we have enough people using it. It was actually November. Looking for my picture. Two 10.3 snapshot. Two 10.2 release. Here we go. Shift optimization. So here was the fix that went out. And reduce shift calculations that may have an actual result. And this is your classic one line fix that gets rid of the bug. And we cloaked it under the cover of an optimization because that's what caused the bug. So we just go back and fix the optimization. And why did this get the red X on it? Because we have Sonar Cloud. Yeah, we had Sonar Cloud turned on. Because we didn't have enough code coverage, but we didn't have any bugs. So, hey, we're good. Which the code coverage is actually a good point because later on as part of the vulnerability, when you do these vulnerabilities, it opens up a new workspace for you. And I can't get at it now because I've submitted it and closed it. But let's see, this security advisory should show up in the changelog. but you can also put your proof of fix in it as well. And in this commit, I put in the actual test vectors. And the test vectors are basically the golden piece that anyone with much EVM experience could figure out exactly how to exploit this. If I push these test vectors out with the fix, someone paying attention that was motivated enough to cause problems could have seen what was going on here and said, oh, you have a byte boundary bug on 32 bytes, which the reference tests don't validate. So let's go ahead and figure out, you know, test all the other clients. Because another thing you'll discover about these Ethereum clients is when one client has a bug, the other clients tend to have it. So I also communicated this. We have a Telegram group with key devs from the other, not a Telegram group, a, what's that? One of the encrypted messaging groups. We have a messaging group with all of the other EVM developers on all the other clients. And I was able to share this with them. And, you know, their initial response was, oh, wow, why didn't their tests get that? So it's, you know, some of these security errors is just, you know, you get enough minds in the room and they can't always think about it because it's so obscure. But once they see it, they can go ahead and fix it, because there's many times in this group where another mind will say, oh, we have this bug and basically we'll have it, or Geth will have it and we'll say, oh, we got lucky because we do a different approach. But, you know, these things, these failures tend to cluster and they tend to get used. So that's the quick overview of reporting a bug, and also the, I think the more important part is the CVSE. If you have what you think is a bug, you can just go to this page, go to the calculator, fill out the things, and it'll answer the questions for you. You know, you just need to ask, you know, is this high complexity? What's the standard for high and low complexity? Integrity, well, what on earth is integrity? Well, there's, for low, it'd say you could modify data. For high, you could total loss, you could totally change the data. I mean, those would probably be relevant. You know, if you could crank everything up, it doesn't take much to get a 10. On some of these. Scope, I think, is an instant win. Complexity, bring stuff down. Privileges required. User interaction, none. Yeah, this, none. If you can change scope with no interaction, huh, gotta get a combo on some of these. But there's a lot of arcane rules that go with calculating these numbers, and it'll help you figure it out for you. So that's my experience reporting bugs.
Perfect. So I have a few questions and
sure.
So far what you explained, right? So there are many things that we can, as a community, start looking into. For example, I know, Rai, you mentioned some time ago that Hyperledger doesn't by itself has an ability to create the issue ID. However, we rely on, I mean, most of the Linux Foundation projects rely on external reporting entity that would create an ID for us. So is there a recommendation from Linux Foundation on whether to go use the GitHub's one, or is there any?
My personal recommendation is if you want to know what my answer to almost anything is, I want to put the power to do the thing in the hands of the people that want to do the thing. And GitHub makes that very easy for maintainers of repos. So my recommendation is use GitHub. It's integrated with our flow and it's really nice. So I would not worry about trying to find another agency.
Yeah, and I would add to this, every time we do something different, eventually we go back to say, okay, now the service at GitHub is better and it's just a hassle to use something else. So let's switch to whatever GitHub is supporting. So might as well stick to it right now.
And okay. I know that the Linux Foundation, is going to have a bunch of guidance on this coming out soon around the OpenSSF project. And you know, there's gonna be SBOMs, there's gonna be a lot of guidance coming out about this. So there will be some more concrete guidance in the next quarter or so. but this GitHub process will definitely be still be part of it.
Okay. The other question, oh, I see Hart raising his hand. Hi, Hart.
Hey, Dano, I had a question. Do you think we could improve this process or perhaps make it more specific to some of the applications that we're working on, like specifically blockchain stuff? Like, do you know if there's an Ethereum thing that's sort of more blockchain specific? Like for a security bug, you might ask if it affects consensus or stuff like that.
So I think we would probably want to provide guidance as to the various fields. That would be, let me bring up the screen again and share that.
Like maybe we want our own scoring system here, right?
So if we do our own scoring system, that's our own thing, and it reduces. I mean, when I reported it through this way with the CVE and the numbers, someone from Linux Foundation made sure that it got submitted to the MITRE database, and they added a few lines of my description, and they massaged it, and they gathered all these URLs together to show all the commits. So one of the risks of doing our own scoring system is that we lose some of these general integrations. And when it comes to, you know, making enterprises happy, you know, they want to be able to know that if there's something wrong, it's going to come through this channel. If there was anything I would change, I would probably think we should get better guidance as to what we need to change, what we need to describe in these fields for what, how these apply to a blockchain. Because when it's a consensus failure, you could make two arguments about availability of how it impacts the system. It's like, well, it's a smart contract and it'll fail. Well, that only affects that smart contract. But if it affects the validator node and if it affects the ability of the validator node to participate in consensus, you know, it's probably a high complexity attack that could halt the chain. And that, I think, any bug that could halt the chain, I think, is an instant 10.0.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's, I think if there's anything we would do, it's, you know, we would give, if there are certain situations and certain things that can be done, we would give recommendations on how to score it to make sure that the scored value is high enough. You know, maybe we should, you know, drop, make sure that it's if attack complexity, we could change the attack complexity on some of these, because let's see, this is what got me an 8.6 or 7.5. What numbers would increase? Because these all lower it. This lowers it. This lowers it. This lowers it. Yeah, I don't think that I could do anything that wouldn't. Integrity, maybe. I don't know, but I mean, I think we could give, you know, recommendations as to what these fields mean, and maybe, you know, we could say, yeah, CVE is a 7.5, but we should consider this to be a critical because we've observed chain halts. You know, if we've seen, because there's also the issue of the temporal score. I think all these temporal scores only reduce it. Remediation level, there's an official fix that brings it down. Confirmed, that only brings it down. These are only mitigating factors. Will any of these raise it?
I mean, I guess my question.
Here we go. We can give recommendations on the environmental score. So maybe we have an extra number on blockchain score that will set floors for it. We still use these scores, but we have another category of, I don't know if we want to call it a blockchain score, but, you know, if you get a chain halt, that's an instant 10.0 if it's been observed. You know, that's, if there were any changes, it would be to add extra layers and add score floors to some of these conclusions.
Yeah, I guess one way to do that would be to add extra ratings. Mm-hmm. So I guess, yeah, I don't know. I guess the target audience for this is probably someone who's not working in security. And we should be cognizant of that. And that's certainly a blind spot that I have. But
I think the target audience for this is going to be, well, there are a lot of audiences, but I think like the primary one is going to be people that have this deployed, right? It's going to be ops. And if they're using a tool like SNCC or whatever, and they see that you have a CVE in one of your dependencies, then you need to update. I think that is one of them. It's
okay.
It's a low bandwidth way to convey information. But when I, if you could go to the, Dano, if you could go to the GitHub repo.
Oh, right. That makes total sense. Sorry to.
Yeah, no worries.
Thank you for explaining that, because that puts Dano's comment in much more context for me.
Okay. Well, I'll try to do a screenshot soon and show you something else, but carry on.
I know this works because we got a dependabot for this at work. Services. Then let me find pull requests. No, we just get these all the time. There's none of them that are tied to security. Would have been a 10.2.3.
Could I share my screen for a second?
Yeah.
This is what I see for a random other project. These dependabot alerts that say, you know, the severity. So that's...
Yeah, I have seen this too in Fabric.
Yeah.
But this would be reported only if GitHub has an integration to those projects, right? Or do they have any other mechanism?
Which is why they troll the CVE reports for GitHub repos and they try and tie it to it because of the value, or whoever works this in MITRE. Let me check my email to see who it was, Linux Foundation, who it was the that I got that from.
I don't remember. I remember vaguely being involved in that, but I don't remember who did. It was probably Scott, would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doing CVE just gets me all of the security vulnerabilities from the security list. I'll dig for the email and let you know if I find it.
Sure. So another question that comes up, Dano, in the when you were walking us through the scoring guidelines and how you process that information was regarding communication, that especially in this case, it was Ethereum where it could have been affected in other case as well. I mean, other protocols, other implementations as well.
So I think this is honestly the less interesting case where you find a vulnerability and you decide to report and you decide to escalate. If you escalate something that shouldn't be escalated, I think there's less security damage. You're just creating a little bit of noise. But I think the more interesting case is, let's say I find something and I don't know if it's a CVE and I have my own decision to decide it's not CVE worthy. What thresholds do I seek outside advice to say, you're right, this isn't CVE worthy, or, you know, this absolutely should be a CVE because this affects X, Y, and Z that you might not have exposure to? So that's one, you know, one question in the checklist process. But at the same time, every time I feel a bug, file a bug, do I need to get someone from an outside project to read the bug and say, oh, this is a security exploit, this isn't? There's some threshold where you would, you know, decide to self-report, and some threshold where you think, well, this is, you'd want to say, well, I think this is a security vulnerability. I assessed it with someone outside the project and they said, you're not sure, and I don't think it is. So you got outside counsel is probably the wrong word because that implies it talked to a lawyer. But you sought outside advice, and the advice was, we concur, it's not security worthy, but it's on the line, so you don't need to do a CVE on it. And that's the part of the process, you know, what duty do I have when we think we have a CVE and we turn it down to disclose it to other people or to share with other people or to seek the counsel? Because like I said, not everything is, you know, should even go through this process. You know, you misspelled a word, that's not a security exploit, but it's a bug. So, you know, I don't know.
So that goes back to the discussion that we had earlier on what should be the responsibility from a community versus the reporter versus the project maintainers and the staff.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
And that also puts up another discussion point of, I mean, when do we consider reporting these as critical vulnerabilities? Because having a score of 7.5, it showed it as a high critical, may not be critical, but high issue. Maybe there are implementations or ops teams who could be interested in patching this up. So that was an interesting case, the explanation that you gave of silently patching it and then reporting it. I guess that's another topic that we will have to discuss.
Right. So I think falls into the responsible disclosure because that is the established pattern among production networks is and that's what Geth has been doing. They tried giving a warning ahead of time, say, hey, there's going to be a security patch. You'll need to update this one when it comes out next Tuesday. Within days, someone had reverse engineered it from a big old code dump, figured out exactly what the bug was, created a transaction that caused parts of the Ethereum network to fork some critical infrastructure. So from that experience, I think that confirms the practice of stealth patch it and then announce it a month later when, you know, it's been out, because, you know, you'll say you patch it in version 0.3 and then 0.7, you'll actually announce and say, hey, this is a mandatory update. There's security fixes. And the fixes didn't come in the 0.6 to 0.7. It came all the way back in the 0.3. And once it's out, you'll disclose, by the way, it's this fix, here it is. We patched it a month ago. So that makes it a bit more difficult, because that's one of the classic problems with security reporting is to say, hey, there's a security thing. And you know, it's the day one, the day two attacks where people reverse engineer the patch and go attack it. That's why, you know, Microsoft went to their patch Thursday solutions, why patch security releases are coordinated amongst larger projects, so that the window of this vulnerability is reduced. So, and with the active blockchain, you can't wait till the third Thursday of the month to release a security update.
Yeah, Dana's exactly right. This is standard practice, and this goes back to people reverse engineering Windows updates. This kind of attack vector long predates blockchain. And just getting the best practice is always, of course, to disclose the bug, but you want to disclose it well after it's been fixed and after everyone has been given reasonable time to update.
And they make great conference sessions where you go back and say, here's the bug, here's how I found it, here's what happened.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know, yeah.
Those are always the ones that I always love to attend.
This is security research, right? People talk about like attacks they've done or vulnerabilities, you know, and they talk about how they fixed it, and this is, you know, like 6 months after the fact. So yeah, if you like this, there are a bunch of good security research conferences to go to where you can have literally see dozens of talks like this.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Art or Dano. So let again. So one of the questions that comes up with this is, so whenever we report a vulnerability like this, there would be requests in terms of auditing that goes on in identifying if somebody exploited that.
Yeah, right? You can look at this. This is an interesting question for Hyperledger, because Hyperledger, because this is easier for Ethereum, right? Where Ethereum owns the code and they also own the blockchain, and they can try to examine, right? Like for Dano's bug, people could just do a search and see if there are any smart contracts that contained like similar code that could have done this exploit, right? But this is a little harder, right? If you don't necessarily have the production blockchains. So, I mean, I guess we could solicit input from the community to see if these things were exploited. But this can be difficult because no one likes to say they're exploited.
But they love to say we ran the audit and came up clean.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So people update and say, oh yeah, we're doing great, but no one is, yeah. It's a hard sell to get people to say like, oh yeah, we were exploited by this bug. So I do want to say though, I mean, Dano, you mentioned that the CVEs are just like the inflated CVEs are just noise. And my experience with a lot of these things is particularly contributors that are not core to people that are not core to a project have a tendency to wildly inflate CVEs. So I sort of view this as you want people core to the team to go over everything, obviously, before before you say the sky is falling. I don't know. Have you had that experience?
That there's an exploit on our WordPress page on some marketing thing, and therefore it's critical.
Well, I mean, that's an extreme circumstance, but yeah.
It happens regularly, so I don't know if I call it extreme. People make that claim. Just
extreme exaggeration.
It happens
constantly.
Some of
these exaggerations.
it's going on right now. And on our HackerOne program, every bug that gets submitted is like a 10.0, and it's not. So,
well, I was going to say, I think any bounty program, it kind of pushes in that direction, unfortunately. Of course, people are going to claim they found the gold.
Yeah. And that's why I guess for these questionnaires, the best questions are ones that are concrete. But So I guess the action items, like one good thing we could do is think about the scoring guidelines for Hyperledger. I think, Dano, you suggested that earlier.
Yeah, maybe contemplate a supplementary score that would elevate levels instead of score floor or some things like a chain halt should get a 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Any the wild chain halt should get a 10.
any consensus break should be, you know, should be huge, right?
Yeah, anything that could cause a validator to fall out of consensus should be at least a 9.
Yeah, I mean, any core cryptographic protocol breaks, all of these things.
So Hart, if you don't mind, would you lead on this activity? You can bring in others as needed. I mean, maybe
I can like take a stab at it. You guys might hate what I've done, but I think this is, I can definitely think of some things that are blockchain specific, and we can say like, you know, this should get our immediate attention, right?
Right. And probably other thing to note would be, since we expanded the scope of Hyperledger Foundation itself, we need to look at holistically.
Are you referring to like multi-party system stuff?
Right.
So I think this is... is this call being recorded?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. So along with multi-party systems, I was about to mention, we do have projects such as ARSA and
right. And this, like, this scoring system doesn't make a lot of sense for ARSA. But that's obviously like a totally different beast. I think there are some other things we probably want to do that would be more relevant for ARSA that would also be relevant for potentially other Hyperledger projects. So one of the things the OpenSSF is doing is I kind of call it like a review diary, where you can look at, where people can sort of document the reviews that have been done for various different projects or even like more fine-grained like files or libraries or stuff like that. And then you can say, you know, like, oh, well, this piece of code has been reviewed by all of these people. It has had all this automated work done on it, all this analysis. It's good. We're happy with it. We're like, oh, no, you know, only like, you know, only two maintainers took a cursory took a cursory glance at this code. Maybe we shouldn't be so confident in its security. So like for ARSA, one of the things we do is we get cryptographers to review code, and sort of like documenting that is really useful. It lets us know what people think is secure and what people, you know, think is not, and how confident we are in the security of the code. But documenting this, you know, documenting this in a place where the public can see it is probably a really good idea. And this might be something that, you know, this open SSF tool might be something that we can, that other projects in Hyperledger might be interested in looking at. Did that all make sense?
Sure. Do you have any info or links on that OpenSSF tool? Maybe it's better if we can
try to find it. Yes. The OpenSSF is, Rye, can you change chat so I can broadcast, or you can broadcast to everyone? There we go.
I think I changed it a while ago.
Okay, perfect. So this is what I'm talking about. and this isn't like quite to the point where we want, where we could use it yet, but this is kind of, I think, a really good idea. I know Arno is familiar with the OpenSSF stuff. Is anybody else? Rye, I'm sure, is.
Yeah, heard of it.
Yes, also.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. I'm not spending every waking minute working on it, but
yeah, it's interesting stuff. From our perspective, though, and Brian and David and people will tell you this, the OpenSSF is really focused on bringing up the floor of security. And we probably want to concern ourselves more with the ceiling. But it will probably have a lot of useful tools for us to look at using.
Okay. Can you expand a bit on your statement that I'm trying to boss this? OpenSSF is trying to bring the floor up and we are more interested in the ceiling. What was that about?
Can you? Sorry, this was an English idiom. The OpenSSF, at least at this point, is focused on automated processes to find common security bugs. Or common security malpractice. And sort of, you know, obviously the better security framework you have in place, the less useful that is going to be to you. So like, for instance, Fabric pretty much already implements something equivalent to what the OpenSSF recommends.
When you say tool, is it going, is it a static code analysis kind of a tool, or is it a questionnaire kind of a tool?
Like all of the above.
Yeah, I have to agree with this. I mean, I don't want you to think that OpenSSF only deal with this, because I mean, there are many different activities all the way to, you know, listing the top 200 most critical open source components out there that should be secured and monitored closely, to, you know, providing tools, as well as there's basically, it's a follow-up to the CCI badges. There is what's called SALSA, which provides a set of criteria with different levels that you can claim to comply with, that gives people different insurances as to the level of security of your software. And it does go into like tools that also do static analysis with, you know, there's this tool called Scorecard that runs a bunch of heuristics, their tests, and they will look at many different things, not just your code. They also look at, you know, do you have like peer review on all your commits, for instance, things like this. So there's a huge range of activities around OpenSSF. And it, I mean, right now it's got the focus. It's a bit like Hyperledger in the early days, where, you know, it becomes like the sinkhole for everything related to software security seems to be coming into OpenSSF. Or more positively, it's the center of gravity. Read a sinkhole might be seen as something negative.
Perfect. Probably this is something which we can go over in detail in our next call. We can review it once. Thanks for the link, Hart.
Yeah, I mean, this is just something that's I think would be really useful, but it may be not suitable for everything.
Sure. Okay, so I guess we do have one action item that for us out of this discussion so far. And I wanted to also cover some part of our next topic that we had to cover today. And we'll come back to this topic about scoring and then reporting vulnerabilities. But so in the one other discussion that we had in our previous call was regarding how do we report vulnerabilities. So I guess there were many talks around a project team reporting vulnerability versus somebody else reporting. And again, it covers all those questions of how do we decide if an issue is vulnerable or not? And we discussed that we'll put around our thoughts in a wiki, but I don't see any proposals yet, but I'm open for suggestions. And then we can probably start a page where we can jot down ideas and start working towards it. And I'm open for suggestions. If we think we need more time to probably put down thoughts, maybe we'll cover it in our next call. However, we need to start working towards it.
So I guess the action items are, I will think about scoring guidelines for blockchain. Do we have a list, or like, where should I do this work, basically? I can do it in like a Google Doc and share it with everybody, or I could do it on the wiki. Does anybody have a preference?
Please at least do it in your personal space on the wiki. And then once you're done iterating on it, we can move the content over elsewhere.
Okay. Maybe then I will post in a Google Doc. Can I post on this page like a link to a Google Doc in the contents for more interactive editing?
So the reason Google star is blocked in China. So using Google Docs for anything collaborative excludes anyone in China.
Okay.
So that's why I'm harping on using the wiki. Go for it and let's just get the content over to the wiki as soon as reasonable.
Okay.
So probably we can reutilize the space of task force if required. For example, Rai had put up this proposal some time ago, and we can continue adding more proposals over here. We then have all the required materials in one place.
Sure.
I pasted the link to this task force. Perfect. So I guess for the next meeting, we have three topics to be discussed. We'll go over the OpenSSF security reviews once, and then the guidelines for reporting vulnerabilities plus the scoring guidelines for blockchain. And then we need to think towards other than blockchain projects within Hyperledger Foundation, if we need any extra scoring guidelines for them. So these three would be topic for our next call in 2 weeks.
Just out of curiosity, do you think there are any things that are non-blockchain that will need more scoring criteria?
I don't know. So I'll keep the option open. If we think we, at this point in time, I'm unable to think of any. But let's keep that option open. And if we could not find anything, then we'll probably close it.
Okay. Yeah. No, my intuition would be that blockchains would have the most difficult security model. But it's possible that I'm just missing something. Yeah, it's a good thing to consider.
Okay. All right. I don't have more agenda items for today, so we could probably end early. Thank you all, and looking forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you.